Welcome. I'm Halcyon, and this is Hug Nation. Today, I want to talk about containers of kindness. This weekend, I had two opportunities to reflect upon and be reminded of some of the great joys in my life, some of the great opportunities to connect, and the gifts that I am given through the gifts that I give. And if I can be a little bit more specific, you will probably appreciate that. The first weekend of every month, I do First Saturdays, the homeless outreach we do here in San Diego and in some other cities. And also it is the Pink Heart Meeting, the once a month gathering of my Burning Man camp to plan for the upcoming events, as well as an opportunity to just have some social connection. And so the first weekend of the month is so energizing for me. Kind of makes you think, Halcyon, why don't you create more opportunities that make you feel as good as you do on the first weekend of the month? Maybe we'll get more into that later. So both of these activities are very different. One is service in a more traditional outreach to needy people in the community, and one is a gathering of my Burning Man family. They do overlap in the realm of gifting. In fact, First Saturdays was, for me, definitely influenced by my desire to bring gifting, a principle of Burning Man, into the default world. But I was thinking more about how else are they different? The people that go, so there are some overlap of burners that go to both, but there's not that much overlap in terms of the people. There is a lot of overlap in the type of people, not in the type of lifestyles, but in the open-heartedness and in the desire to be more connected and to be more of service. And I started thinking about how each of these is kind of a container of kindness and how important it is to have containers of kindness. And maybe kindness is the wrong word, but it is the starting place. Because we need to have places where we feel that we will be respected and supported. And I think all of that starts with kindness. For Saturdays, I remind people that, in fact, I actually got into a little bit of an altercation with a downtown neighbor who was frustrated that we were feeding the homeless in an area outside of a shelter that is, you know, on the wrong side of the tracks, which, you know, in his mind, we were bringing in the dregs into his neighborhood and causing all sorts of filth and trash and undesirable elements. And I have sympathy for him, absolutely. Not as much sympathy as I have for someone with no home. However, I do have sympathy for everyone's desire to protect their feeling of safety and cleanliness and their property values and all these things. I mean, it wasn't rage or anger or meanness or evil that was making him voice his opinions to me and made him eventually call the police on us. They didn't show up. I think stopping people from feeding the homeless is got to be a very low priority for the police, and certainly one of the worst calls you got to answer to. Can you imagine being a police officer and being like, so I have to go and tell all these Good Samaritans to stop being good? Ugh. So, but when I was talking to this guy, and he was trying to convince me that our efforts would be more effective if we partnered with a bigger charity that has a shelter, and to convince people to go away from his neighborhood. And I was like, I was trying to help him understand that the aim of First Saturdays was not trying to help homeless people. The games of First Saturdays was just to show kindness and to have an opportunity to be kind. And I think of the volunteers as every bit as the recipients of the First Saturdays vibe as those that are shopping at our used clothes and care pack stations. But he was having a hard time getting that. And eventually I realized that we were not actually having a conversation. He was trying to, you know, he was angry at me, and he did so in a calm way. And so I appreciated that. I thanked him for his feelings and then excused myself and went on. I'm getting a little bit too into the weeds, but I guess what happened during this, except for that one encounter, so many of the encounters I have with volunteers and with recipients of our clientele was that of joy and gratitude. And I think what makes the experience so wonderful is not just that of getting. You know, people aren't happy because they're getting stuff from us. People are happy because we have this vibe of kindness. There's this desire to connect with someone and say, hello, look people in the eye and say, how can I help you? Can I get you this? What size are you? This belt will look great with those new shoes you just got. And that tone, I mean, my voice goes up when I talk that way. Maybe I can simplify this all as just saying, talk with a higher voice. Nah, maybe that won't work. Yes, it will. No, it won't. But this tone and vibe of kindness lets us release the tension in our shoulders and our body. Lets us let down our guards that we have up at all times to protect ourselves, to keep ourselves from being judged or attacked or, you know, I struggled to stay kind as this guy that I was talking with was like, you know, kind of attacking me and kind of, you know, he was pleasant as possible, but there was not a vibe of kindness that would allow me to be truly open to him. But when that, if that was truly the case and we were both in the state of kindness and being open and receptive and supportive of each other's needs, I think we could have had a solution that would have been much more conducive to both of us. We both would have left there with thinking, huh, okay, let me both stew on this and find a win-win out of this. Because you need that kindness to know that if I am vulnerable, if I expose myself, if I share something that may not be met with approval, that I won't be attacked. I won't regret, you know, putting myself out there. And that container of kindness, it's where magic happens. It's where we become who we are meant to be. Maybe not meant to be, but who we already are, but we struggle. And I'm saying this not because I too, people laugh when I say, sometimes I'm shy, and you know, I go, well, no. I've been working my whole life trying to be bold in my truth, but it is a practice. And I need to have my containers of kindness so that if I slip or if I say the wrong thing or if I say something that people don't understand in that moment, I don't feel like I'm wrong, I'm bad, I'm not worthy. And that's one of the reasons why Burning Man is so powerful and so magical, is because it is a container of kindness. It can be a container of kindness. I think people, even as people act snarky and anarchistic and explosives and fire, and there's aggression there. In the freedom, there is aggression. But there is also an overall acceptance and kindness towards any sort of authenticity. And when you feel protected, when you feel like there is a supportive environment around you that will cradle you as you expose yourself and as you try out things, the first time you sing in public, your voice is going to crack. And if you get attacked and laughed at, you may not sing again. Or the first time you puppeteer, or the first time you do any of these things. I'm very afraid of trying things for the first time because I hate that feeling of not being good and feeling like, But so many people in, and I won't say Burning Man, I'll say any sort of community that provides that container of kindness is doing God's work. I don't know why I use the word God's work. A substitute something important, magical, the healing of the world, the purpose of why we're here is for us to release the magic and the gifts inside us. I use magic as kind of like an asterisk. Substitute beyond the default scripts that you've been given. Put that whenever I say magic. And so creating these containers of kindness allows for the authentic personal expression of people that then allows for ripples of healing in the world. And I think it's important to remember that a teeny tiny authentic blossoming of a person is no less amazing and miraculous than moving a mountain. Both of those are actually, moving the mountain potentially is a terrible thing. Moving a mountain could be against the flow of nature and all that is right and good and divine in the world. But a person becoming their truth, that is the flow of the universe. That is the flow of the seasons and the clouds and the flowers and the spawning and the evolution is a human being evolving into their truth. And so the kindness container is what is required for that to happen. And I think that when we have those containers and we allow ourselves to be, we inevitably find ourselves in a place where we want to be of service more. We want to give more. We want to be kind. When we're given the opportunity and the safety to be ourselves, we want to be kind. And so the kindness container breeds kindness, and it breeds ripples of kindness into the world, creating more kindness containers. We are so, I think, afraid, and rightfully so, of the consequences of being kind and being vulnerable, that it requires a community of kindness, a container of kindness, to let that come out and let that bloom. And that can be a Burning Man environment. That can be a knitting circle. It can be the Juggalos. It can be your Comic-Con crew. It can be anything. And the larger those groups get without getting corrupted, the more powerful they are. Because then you can pool resources and go, oh, you're good at this, you're good at this, I'm good at this, you're good at this. Together we can do this within this container of kindness. So the things that happened this weekend that were that remind me that first Saturdays, there was this guy that came up to me and he was teary eyed and he just was like, I need this. He was a volunteer, and he's like, how can I do more of this? He's like, man, you're born to do this, and that's what's like, born to do what? I was thinking about this after the fact because it made me feel good when he said that. I'm like, what does he mean, born to do this? And I think what I'm good at is creating containers of kindness. The incredible acts of love that happened at First Saturdays were done by the 50-some-odd volunteers. They organized things better. They interacted with people better. But my job in this was helping to create the container of kindness that made it all feel good and made it all feel like, now I can let my love out in this container. And then the next day at our Burning Man camp meeting, and I've shared things over the years of different things that happened at Pink Heart. Like I've shared in the past and will share many times again, the time this year when I walked upon a wedding happening where the people getting married had met at Pink Heart 2 years ago, got engaged last year, and we're getting married this year, and realizing that this love story had taken root and blossomed within the Pink Heart container of kindness was like one of the highlights of my life. But at the meeting, a Pink Hearter Chardonnay shared a story. We went through the whole meeting, and then as we were getting ready to do our closing circle, which is, it's funny, and that's also why I've been thinking about this. So during the meeting, I used to be very leaderly and managery, and now I do the opening ceremony of the meeting and the closing ceremony and allow everybody's talents to be shared and everybody's gifts to benefit the group. And so what I'm doing is creating the container of kindness. Or I'm the team lead on container creating. And let's see, this is. And so Chardonnay, as we're getting ready to do our closing blessing, and it's, I love the way we do it. We do a Zoom meeting, so it's broadcast around the world. We have people in France and in England and in Israel and all around the U.S., and then we have a local group, and then we have pods of people that like gather in Seattle and in San Francisco, and so we all gather in these different areas and then connect with a video, and then for the closing, everyone says, touch somebody who's there, or touch the screen, and just let's try to get a physical sensation of connection with all these people. And before I did the closing blessing, Chardonnay said, can I say something? And she said, you know, years ago, you guys took me in as a new person, and it was on the pink fur couches that a campmate, Leslie, asked Chardonnay what her dream was. And it was in this container of kindness that she shared her dream, which was to be a thru-hiker, something I didn't even know was a thing. But it's hiking these massive amounts of mileage, just using your feet. As a Californian, we don't do that very much, but apparently you can get places without cars. I didn't know this. So she shared that over the last 3 years, she's hiked 8,000 miles over the Appalachian Trail, Pacific Coast Trail, the Continental Divide Trail. And in May, she's going to do the last 600 miles and complete this trifecta, whatever they call it, the triple crown of through hiking. And will be, when she completes it, will be the first African-American woman to do so. And even though I had not been active in supporting her, you know, I clicked like and linked to her stuff and her blog posts and said, good job. But I was not an active participant in her support crew. As she was sharing and listing off all the people in the camp, all of her camp family that had supported her and made it possible for her to do this, whether it was, you know, picking her up on the and it's dusty and dirty on some road somewhere, or sending a package for her to pick up somewhere. And I had the same feeling of this extension of our container. The magic that can happen within this container of kindness is what helps people to be their best selves and who they really are. And when someone is who they really are, it is a gift to the world, and it is a gift to everyone who touches them, because everyone who is now exposed to Chardonnay's glow is inspired by the truth that she is living, inspired by the realization of her dreams. But dreams don't happen in a vacuum. They happen within containers of kindness. And I just, lately I've been a little hard on myself in terms of productivity and achievements. And to see one day after the other, seeing these examples of the ripples of kindness and the effect of the containers of kindness that I've been working on has made me really rethink what my gifts are and what is required for all of us to find our gifts. And so in a big way, I would like and I hope that these weekly gatherings for Hug Nation plays a role in creating a container of kindness and plays a role in reminding you that you are accepted. And if you are vulnerable, it is the most beautiful thing in the world. And yeah, I'm amazed how easy it is to lose track of what you're supposed to do. And one of the things that happens when you, I think, we were talking at the meeting yesterday about how powerful this a community of support is, and how a tribe is so important in lifting you up, whether, you know, no matter what tribe that is. And someone brought up that the when things break down is when you have scarcity. You know, when everyone in the tribe has their needs met, it's just lift, lift, lift. When you start to have scarcity, people start to the tribe breaks down, people, or the tribe breaks into an aggression against the other. And we see that all over. It's an evolutionary trait that, you know, as to protect your genetics, you get into us versus them mentality. It's we're wired that way. And it's because of scarcity. When there's not enough stuff, I hate you, hope you die, and I'm going to protect me and mine. And we're thinking about how Burning Man does, you know, Burning Man works partially because of its abundance. I had a friend, Brandon, said years ago, he goes, oh, this is what would happen if we had unlimited energy. When you have the ability to create because of desire, not necessarily out of resource. And I reflected, oh, it's too bad that we have such scarcity in the world. And the person said, well, we don't have scarcity in the world. And it's like, oh, right. We just have a distribution problem. And so how do we get the people with the resources? How do we get the abundance to be more evenly distributed? I think we just have to keep increasing our circles of kindness until someone who's got a lot feels like, oh my gosh, I can contribute to these ripples. I can contribute to the healing of all these people. I can contribute to the uplifting and the flow of love and divinity in the universe simply by allowing my resources to magnify this circle of kindness. Well, sign me up. So thank you for being a part of my circle of kindness. Thank you for allowing me to talk through this stuff and forgiving me when I make no sense at all. I love you. Let's have a hug. Wherever you are, grab yourself by the shoulders. Oh, and be grateful for this physical body. If you have any injuries or pains or aches, be grateful for those too, as they are reminders of everything else that is working perfectly. This body that allows us physical sensations and mobility and adventures, thank you. And beneath the physical experience of this universe is the emotional experience, the thoughts that rampantly travel through our head that give us opinions and make us feel excited and scared and make all of the drama in life, which is fun. Who would want a boring, flatline experience of the world? We want a roller coaster! Whee! So thank you for those thoughts and our emotions and our jerseys and the opinions and all the labels that we wear as we get into conflict or find our tribes. Thank you for all of that experience of humanity. But beneath that, beneath the physical and the thought and the emotion, is this divine energy, this love that flows through us, this consciousness. And so for just 3 breaths together, let's allow ourselves to be free from our physical identity and our thought identity, our ego, and just be the energy of love and light that shines through all people as we take 3 breaths together. Ready? In through the nose, out through the mouth. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. I love you. Yay! Welcome everybody who's here live and everyone who's here on the archive and everybody who has found a digital transcript of this through the sale of our data. Welcome everybody. We got B from Zurich. And from the umlauts, I can tell that that is foreign. Or it's the name of a new Motley Crue cover band. So there was a time when I was asked by a number of Burning Man camps and people active in the conversation about consent that they wanted me to get on board with the idea of consent being the 11th principle. Burning Man has these 10 principles. Consent should be the 11th. And I was against it. I may have even done some Hug Nations where I talked about how and why I was against it. And I want to come out and say that my attitudes about consent have changed. Now, I've never been anti-consent. I've always been pro-consent. But initially my thoughts about consent was that it felt like a don't as opposed to a do. And recently with the Me Too movement, there have been conversations about experiences, very universal experiences, with male, female, interactions and just, it was, it, I feel like my understanding of the reality of the female experience was incomplete. And as I've been trying to analyze my privilege over the last several years and trying to do as much listening as possible and trying to stop myself when I feel a defensiveness kick in, which I think is common. I think we have to expect that, and I think we have to leave room for that and not fall into fighting when somebody does have a defensiveness reaction. There was a great interview this morning with Destin Garrick and Nanine McCool, the woman who stood up to Tony Robbins recently and has become a very important, I think, part of the ongoing dialogue and providing an opportunity to gently work through some of the misunderstandings, the victim mentality that Tony Robbins attributed to the Me Too movement. And Nanine said something about, you know, we need to make room to listen to all of people's opinions because otherwise we can't have a dialogue. And it's very tempting and very easy when someone says something that you know to be wrong and you are now so well versed in the social reasoning why what they think is wrong that you are quick to attack it and do not leave room for that person to have their opinion and then change their opinions. Does that make sense? So if you hear something that you know is wrong and express that, you've turned the other person, you've made them wrong, or you've turned them into the enemy, or you've turned them into an idiot, or you've turned them into a misogynist, or you've turned them into something that now they have to defend themselves. Whereas if you can allow them to listen and find a way to express an alternate opinion and let them have theirs and have you have yours, then you can have a dialogue. And you give the other person the space and dignity and give them a place to come out of their original opinion without admitting stupidity or ignorance or wrongdoing. And when you attack quickly, that it's very difficult for that to happen. I'm not saying that attacking is not justified. I'm not saying anger is not justified. I'm not saying, but in the hopes of forward progress, in the hopes of dialogue and evolution of societal norms, I think we've learned over the last couple of years that it's nobody is berated into agreement. At least I don't see that happening. You berate someone into the enemy, and then they find their false news or whatever, you know, resources they need to make the case of your stupidity or your snowflakeness or something like that. So, so my opinions on consent have been evolving and such. And I realize that some of it has to do with my own insecurities and my own awkwardness around vocalizing things. And I kind of had this epiphany as I was talking to someone in Boulder that if we, you know, as I start to understand what consent culture could really be, that if we had a world where if you asked for something, everyone was like, good on you, man. That was ballsy. Or that was, thanks for being such a good communicator. Then people would, I think, be more apt to do that. And I think that what we have now is, like, at least my perception is that, and this could be totally off, but this is, from the movies that I've been raised with and my culture stuff, I have this feeling that if I said, boy, I think you're really pretty and I would love for us to be romantic together, that if the chance of her going like, or oh my God, or people around me laughing would be a risk. I think that if we could create a culture where if you laughed at somebody for asking for consent, if that was the embarrassing thing, if we said, oh my God, did you see that? What a loser that person is. That person just like mocked somebody for being a badass and asking and stating their truth. Like if we could, I think that intellectually it's easy to say that that's what we have or what we'd like, but until we have that practice out there, until we have people really celebrating truth speakers, and I think shaming those who shame, it's going to be tough. But I now believe that that is possible. I believe that now we can have, and the value to getting to the other side of this awkward chapter is so huge. I mean, I start to like visualize, what would that world be like? What would interactions be like? How many times have, in my youthful embarrassment, was I sitting on someone's bed, it's late at night, and we're like, oh, let me look at your photo albums. And I think both of us want the other person to say, I like you and I want to kiss you. But both of us are terrified of the other person going like, oh gosh, this is awkward. I don't want to kiss you. Oh gosh, you've made this so weird. I was just watching Santa Clarita Diet, and there's a scene when the guy, you know, this is a common scene, you know, a guy kisses the girl and she says, oh my God. And the guy says, oh, I was just, I didn't really want to kiss you. I just was like, you know, I was just seeing what would happen. It was like a test. You know, like, it was just a good, cool. You don't want to kiss either? Good. Cause that's, yeah, of course. Cause we're like, yeah, that would be stupid. But if the alternate was the reality where it said, you know, like, oh gosh, well, I guess he didn't ask first, but let's say if he asked, and she was like, oh wow, super flattered. I'm going to help you find someone that's perfect for you. And please don't be ashamed of speaking your truth. That's what's going to get you your dream girl. Something like that. I haven't thought this all through, but do you see where I'm going with this? Stella's saying there are communities of subcultures where getting consent is not mocked, it is respected. Exactly. And I think that that is what I am now slowly starting to see the potential of. And I'm also aware of that it is my history, it is my, you know, teen fears and insecurities and my teen patterns of not enoughness that shapes my current worldview and my current inability to see how easy this could be. So as people like me and the die off, perhaps the subcultures that are doing this can get stronger, and perhaps the youth of today can get stronger. I mean, we are certainly at a time when dramatic communication change can happen. I mean, I look at like the way that the whole awareness and inclusion of a trans people has changed in the last few years. And the Me Too movement is changing the dialogue, changing the way we see things, changing the way that we talk about things, certainly changing the way that me and my peers are noticing what is or isn't correct or wrong and what should or shouldn't be shameful. We have a lot of work to do, but my feelings on the importance of consent are not the importance of consent, the potential of consent. It's always critically important. And consent in so many ways, not just in physical contact, but in you know, giving someone a drink, in any, thinking of it as a way to confirm that your gift is a gift. I think it can be so magical and so helpful. There I'd go using the word magical again. I'm really glad that the Tony Robbins dismissal of Me Too did not just fall by the wayside. I think that it ends up being a really good illustration of how things can be misunderstood and how mansplaining can happen and how important and powerful the voice can be that stands up but allows the other person to gradually come across the table. Naneen McCool is I think, a really powerful and positive role model in how to communicate with progress in mind. There's nothing wrong with communication with venting and processing, a personal processing in mind, but that can be very different than with the intent of progress in mind. Oh, I know, this was I wrote down the quote from Naneen McCool. She said, "If we shame people into not sharing their truth, we can't have the discussion." Isn't that so true and so powerful? Bob's saying that modern society's fight or flight instincts are nonsensically out of whack. Not only do we instinctively, reflexively protect the something that needs no protection, we protect something imaginary and fickle. You know, well said. And I think that we do have a real danger in our culture right now of the exaggerated social warrior stance. I've been listening to some Jordan Peterson lately, and he's easy to love and easy to hate, but he makes some interesting points looking at the history of the rise of Nazism. And he became initially popular and kind of became in the news because he took a stand about legislation that was going to make it illegal to, or was going to force the use of trans pronouns. I believe that's what it was. And he said, that's insane, that's crazy, we can't legislate language like this. And he makes the point that legislating thought is far more dangerous and far more Nazi-ish than bigotry. Having the freedom to be bigoted, to say what you want, to be offensive, is the path of a free society. Attacking opinions that are not the ones you like is the path to fascism. And there is evidence of people who believe to be themselves to be warriors of justice and freedom on the left behaving in ways that is very much parallel to a path of restriction and fascism, and the opposite of, I think, what at a 10,000 foot level of the kind of society that people want, it not heading in that direction. So I've gotten myself into some personal challenges with, you know, not agreeing with people who are kind of aggressively fighting racism. Not that I'm aggressively anti-racism, but I'm also aggressively pro-freedom. And someone who is defending the rights of a racist is not a racist. It's a libertarian or something else. And I guess I fall on the side of freedom and trust that in that space of freedom, we can have the dialogues. We can avoid the temptation to shame and hate the other so that we can make progress. If we do not allow the alternate viewpoints to happen, we don't make progress. We have an underground that then bubbles up in the form of KKK rallies and things that we've maybe seen lately. So progress, but not legislative progress, you know? Room for dialogue. Containers of kindness, even for those that we disagree with. That is the magic recipe. Stella saying, everyone is evolving and maturing at different levels. It basically comes down to just being nice. Our society sensationalizes hate and conflict. When this changes, people will be okay with being nice. That's very true. We have a situation right now where, you know, we had a big shift in the world when we went to 24-hour news coverage, and we had this competing stations of news as entertainment. And as people watched ratings and realized that what creates ratings is panic and fear, and that creates an addiction that craves more of this, you know, angering information, we have these distinct and different media narratives that absolutely fan the flames because it is ideal for their bottom line. To keep people consuming information, there has to be more reasons to be angry and more reasons to panic and more reasons to doubt yourself and more reasons to give up your sovereignty and more reasons to think you need to buy things to feel good about yourself. And that spiral has us in a very confrontational place. And so we need the containers of kindness as hospitals from this illness, from this divisiveness. So when we can work to create containers of kindness, first of all, for our own minds, to protect ourselves and allow ourselves to be kind to ourselves, and then allow ourselves to be and promote kindness and respect and support for the people that are close to us in our physical families and relationship families, and expand that to our communities and expand that. That is the work of healing this illness that is tearing us apart and tearing the world apart, tearing the environment apart. But baby steps, container. And with that, I wish you a week of kindness, a life of love. I love you. Have a beautiful day.
Please subscribe to the Hug Nation YouTube channel. Follow me on Facebook. You can check out Halcyon Pink on Instagram, or just listen to the wind and I'll be there. I love you. If you enjoy this, share it with a friend, an open-hearted person who might be part of our wonderful collective Hug Nation family.
If you feel called to, please support me on patreon.com/halcyon. Subscribe to my YouTube channel. Buy my breast milk on eBay. Thanks for being you.